Okay, and we're back again with episode 58, Civil War. I think we missed it a little bit. We're a few weeks late to this one. I didn't even realise it came out in the middle of last month. I've got an ulcer on the back of my tongue, so my voice might sound a bit weird, but...
Nice.
Yeah, Civil War. What do you think?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? It's been met with quite a lot of criticism. Alex Garland wrote one of my favourite novels, The Beach, that I read when I was a lot younger. It's about a guy that goes to Thailand on like a gap year and finds a secluded beach where you know, it's untouched by tourists, it's unspoiled by anybody, it's like a total secret. And there's this little community of people, mostly Westerners actually, that have like discovered it and they decide to live there. And obviously it all goes horribly wrong. And it's really good, and there's a movie adaptation with Leonardo DiCaprio. You've probably seen it, or you've heard of it at least. It's nothing on the book, but it's very good. So I sort of thought, well, he's got a camera, you know, he's directing. Is it a writer that I trust directing a movie? How far wrong can it go? But it's been met with quite a lot of criticism, mostly around sort of the fact that he's not provided any context to the causes of this civil war that he's portraying. But the movie's about a future United States that has crumbled into civil unrest because of the secession of Texas and California. But also there's some hint that Florida's also seceded
and
has become their own sort of faction involved. But essentially, the US has just dissolved into anarchy because two states have teamed up to overthrow the government and sort of seem to be succeeding. Obviously, it's a sort of apolitical move to pick Texas and California because, well, until recent years anyway, they sort of are the two states that represent either end of the political spectrum in America. So it's kind of a conscious decision on Garland's behalf to like not pick a side. It's very overtly not Republican, not Democrat. It's like, oh yeah, this is just a hypothetical scenario where two states have been forced to secede due to a sort of tyrannical president, played by Nick Offerman. But you don't really see a lot of him. He doesn't really sort of play a major role. There's a couple of voiceovers where like he's obviously making statements on the radio talking about how he's ready for the unconditional surrender of the Western forces, which Texas and California have come to be known. But there's no explanation for the sort of the inciting incident or incidents that have led to civil war. And you sort of just get this glimpse of this new America and this new reality that everyone's living in through the eyes of these photojournalists. Lee Smith, who's overtly based on Lee Miller, and that's even alluded to because Jesse says, oh, you've got the same name. Jesse, who's the obviously the younger one, the girl who's got all the aspirations and energy and wants to be like Lee. Is it Joel? And Sammy as well, and this weird kind of group. They're like, you know, they're unlikely companions, aren't they? And they take off to DC together.
Do you know, the whole film I actually thought it was Pedro Pascal.
Oh god. Is that racist?
I mean, I was very tired.
I feel like if it had been Pedro Pascal, it would have worked. And actually, I think you've tapped into something there. Because I remember thinking quite early on, this is The Last of Us.
There was a scene where Michael, Nora, Joel, and Jesse walked into this room where they're about to be faced with a US soldier that was bleeding out, and like he had his hand on her back, and there was just this really strange image of. I got the same image from The Last of Us, where Joel and Ellie were maybe walking into something they weren't sure about, but that's kind of a side note to what I was going to say. So I think last night, after coming out of the film, I felt the same way. But upon reflection, and upon, you know, I've looked into what people are saying about this film as well. I think the point of this film was about photojournalism, not necessarily civil war.
Yeah.
And I think, based on, you know, comments from former war journalists and former war photographers, that, you know, they're pretty happy with the depiction of what went on. You know, okay, the scenes were more dramatic for the cinema, but a lot of those photos captured within this film that we saw are not too dissimilar from what journalists actually end up getting in real life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think we're now in a position, for me, with this film, it was maybe more art than story. And I just wanted to know what you think about that. So I've got another comment. You know, I feel like the film was about risk, excitement, and legacy, which is seemingly how a photojournalist lives their life. You know, they want excitement, they want high risk, and they want that photo that's remembered in history. And I feel like the film kind of encapsulated that. There was a lot of risk. There was scenes that were probably heightened to create drama for the audience. And, you know, civil war in America would create some kind of legacy. So those kind of themes for a journalist, I felt, were dripped throughout the film as well. And it is devoid of story about the civil war, but I do actually think maybe we missed the point.
I don't know. Because I think the problem, and maybe the cause of some of the criticism, is that if that is the focus, it's not sold as the focus. It's not, you know...
Well, that's true.
There's definitely space for a movie about war journalism and war journalists. Photojournalists, you know, more generically. And a movie that exposes the risks that they take and the lifestyle that they live and the kind of people that they are and how important their role is in history and in culture and in journalism. Like, we wouldn't know about tons of stuff that was going on at all if it wasn't for people that take these risks to an extent, right? And I've been thinking about this recently. You know, there's a lot of talk about Palestine and the Met Gala and Kendrick and Drake going back and forth. Like, and there's a lot of talk online, like, you know, well, these are all distractions. This many people have died in Palestine. It's like, yeah, that's awful. But, you know, if you just put your phone down, didn't open the news app or Instagram or whatever, wherever you get in your Twitter, you wouldn't know about any of this. And it is strange. Like, I think, you know, we live in this world where we carry around these little windows that, like, you know, show us what's going on everywhere all the time. And that's not necessarily a negative thing, but it's so integral to our lifestyle now. It's really interesting. And I guess this movie is sort of exploring that a little bit in the way that it's promoting the role of the war photographer and the people that actually document events, current events, you know, to warn the rest of the world, to show the rest of the world, to reveal, like, what's happening. And that's definitely, like, really valid. It's definitely really, really important. But this movie was called Civil War. Not, you know... I can't think of another hypothetical title, but
war,
like,
journalist.
Yeah, you know.
Well, war journalists wouldn't get people to the seats, would it?
No, fair enough. But like, the movie is, it's strange because it feels like Garland has attempted to make a political piece that's devoid of politics, and that's just unfortunately not really going to work. You know, there's no statement really made in this movie. Well, there is, but it's subtle and it takes a while. It's sort of a lot of art, as you say, I guess. It's a lot of, like, shots and imagery of horror and war, and, you know, that kind of comes across like this cautionary tale. You know, this is what it looked like, and this is how close we are to actually civil unrest in the United States. And it's like, yeah, this is awful, but there's no political point because he's attempted to remove the political motivations of either side and of all the characters as well. And that's sort of integral to a civil war. You can't really have a civil war without it. So yeah. I understand why people are a bit like, this is not what I expected to watch.
I I think what this will come down to is this will be one where the audience might be dissatisfied, but the behind the scenes people kind of love it. And I think we, you know, the people behind the scenes of, you know, look at what has been created on screen here. Because to be fair, we've had a year of, or we've had 12 months of Poor Things, Saltburn, all very artistic pieces. And I think we're here again with Civil War. This is an artistic piece disguised as an action movie.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
And it's whether that's a big enough, it's whether that's a problem. That's too much of a problem.
Yeah.
You've disguised it as, you know, the concept of Civil War is extremely interesting.
Yeah.
But this is a film about photojournalists.
Yeah.
It's photojournalism. So there's a bit of deceit here.
Yeah. Yeah, there is.
And I think you know, from your point of view, and I think me watching the film, I was a bit like, well, the interesting bit of a Civil War has not been really played out here.
That's just how I felt.
But now I I'm like, yeah, because this is about a photojournalist.
Yeah.
So what's, and I think we can conclude that they've titled it Civil War because no one would go and watch a film about a war journalist.
I don't know. Probably would.
but you know, this film is now, and I will, we'll go on to A24 later, but this Civil War is now A24's second biggest film already. And I think, you know, the title, the high quality acting on screen as well, you know, that I don't have any criticism for any performances. But I think, you know, that people have been drawn in by the title, the actors are getting high praise for their roles that have played. And I just think the deceit of this actually isn't a movie about Civil War at all is probably going to end up being almost a secondary problem.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've seen a lot. Obviously, most of the criticism is around the lack of statement that the movie makes. I don't even want to bring this person up because I have so much disdain for their work. But there's a YouTuber called The Critical Drinker who's also Scottish, and I'm never going to refer to him again because I don't want to do him the justice of using his name. But a particular Scottish critic, in air quotes, absolutely hated this. Of course, he hates everything, though. And he's actually been called out multiple times for literally lying in reviews. But the point of this movie's gone completely over his head. Briefly scanned his video essay, and essentially his conclusion is like lots of noise and doesn't say anything.
Does it have to say anything? Does every movie have to have a point?
No, not at all. But when it's called Civil War, it does. You know, like you can't make a movie that's got such a divisive literal title. It's Civil War. I mean, you can't really get more divisive, can you? Like, and then just choose to be like, actually, we're not going to tackle this at all. There's a promise of the subject area
in the
title and in the trailers and in the way that the movie's marketed. That make, you know, it. You think it's going to be this movie that boldly tackles current politics in America, or, you know, portrays what would happen if a president did go completely nuts, even more so than recent presidents, and actually start, you know, committing atrocities on their own civilians, airstrikes and stuff. Like, what would actually happen? Because obviously it's a question about the Fifth Amendment and the right to bear arms in the US and the whole thing. You know, they're diehard gun fanatics because we have the right, constitutional right, to rise up against our own government should they start making decisions that we don't like. And it's like, as Jim Jefferies, the Australian comedian, pointed out, like, they have drones. You're not winning. And that's, you know, like, obviously you're talking about a nation of civilians, or a nation in which their civilians goes up against their global superpower government. And the actual exploration of what that would look like in a modern day, in a contemporary time, is super, super interesting.
Of course.
It's really, really interesting. Like, it would be a completely different Civil War to the American Civil War that actually took place. It would look completely different now. And you're expecting an exploration of that. And it feels like Garland kind of dips his toe in that, but, like, it's so brief. Because all you're actually getting is this war-torn landscape in the imagery of the movie, but no explanation of the actual themes. What happened? What's going on? Why are these people acting like
this? Is it our fault, though? Because if you read the description of the film, it would tell you that it was about four war journalists, and they travel across America. Oh, well, not across America, basically down the East Coast.
No, not. I don't think it is because of the way that the movie's marketed. There was a lot of posters and a lot of imagery that was used in the marketing campaign. Yeah, that are shots of scenes that don't even happen. Mm. They're pictures of, you know, soldiers closing in on different political landmarks. You know, I don't know, Mount Rushmore or whatever. I mean, literally the sort of movie background of what would be the DVD box of the posters in the cinema is that the fire in the hand of the Statue of Liberty doesn't feature in the movie.
Mm.
Now, I'm not saying that's misleading, but what I'm saying is that the culmination of all this imagery that isn't actually used gives the impression of a very different film. It makes you think this is going to be a war movie about the politics of a current civil war in America. And of course, you know, even if you read the synopsis and it said, oh, it's shown through the eyes of a photojournalist, you'd think, well, that's a clever idea, because who else is going to be that close to the action? There's an element of authenticity about it being, you know, almost like handheld camera, Cloverfield vibes, where, like, you know, you're seeing the action. There's more horror in it, looking like a genuine news broadcast, you know. So that just seems like a good move on Alex Garland's behalf as well, to have the eye who you're seeing this through be a photojournalist. But you'd still think it's going to be about the Civil War, and it's not. It's about the art and the career of a photojournalist. So there's deceit, and I'm not mad at what the movie did, but I think it sort of stands up and markets itself. The deceit sort of seems a bit dishonest because it markets itself as this bold movie, and it kind of then shies away from everything that you expect it to bravely take on.
Hmm. So going into like the kind of the messaging throughout the movie as well, that the movie itself, I feel like missed a trick towards the end of the film as well. When Jessie, the young photographer, is being kind of really stupid with where she's positioning herself to take photos while she's in the White House, and Lee, who is going through a form of PTSD during this final, through these final scenes, is kind of not taking any photos, and then jumps in front of Jessie to kind of save her life. And then and then Jesse gets that final photo of Lee being shot. I feel like that there's an issue there, because they foreshadow that moment when they're both at the helicopter, when Jesse asks, "Would you take my picture if I got shot?" And Lee, you know, the older, more mature journalist that at that point was showing no compassion, says, "You know, what do you think?" I think they missed a trick. I think with Lee being the one that gets shot at the end, you kind of do this save the audience kind of thing, like, oh, you know, please don't let the young girl get shot, when the actual brutality of the situation I don't think Lee would jump in front of a young journalist at that point, and I think it would have been a way more harrowing image for Lee to be taking a photo of the slain young journalist,
yeah,
the young child. And I feel like with all the brutality that was shown throughout the movie, you know, the headshots and the blood and the gore, we have this almost revisionism, and we've saved the young child from being brutally murdered,
yeah,
when she's being really stupid,
yeah,
and the journalist that's mature and has seen so many bad things jumps in front of a way instead of standing by to take that photo,
yeah,
which he always has,
yeah.
I really feel like that is where the film portrayed itself as well, internally.
I think that's my problem as well, actually. So, just really quick, the critical drinker, and I said never say his name again, but his argument was, you know, this lot of noise. But the reason that I think that this went over his head is, as you said earlier, this movie is ultimately about the art of photojournalism, and it's not about a civil war. Now, as I've already explained, like, I think it's really dishonest of Alex Garland to portray the movie in this way, to then deliver something else. Not to give value to anyone's perspective necessarily, but I can understand why that criticism is, you know, like that people do feel that way. But the thing about photojournalism, you know, it is important. There's a documentary called Which Way Is the Front Line From Here? And it's the life and times of Tim Hetherington, Now, Tim Hetherington is a British photojournalist. True, real guy, real story. And the movie's made up of like a collection of sort of found footage or, you know, real, genuine footage of his tours, the military campaigns that he accompanies in, you know, war-torn nations of Africa. I think he went to Iraq or Afghanistan, and eventually Libya. And it's a really incredible documentary about a really incredible guy. And he is literally the characters. He's a kind of culmination of the characters in Civil War. He is actually that guy, the photojournalist who is following right behind the point man, you know, and these when they're clearing buildings and these in these battles, taking photos like over the shoulders of the soldiers, like, you know, filming executions, all kinds of awful stuff. But like the photos that he gets are absolutely incredible. I seriously recommend everyone like to check out Tim Hetherington's work because it is incredible. Really, really moving stuff, and like really portrays the importance of the photojournalist, really. And he did go a step further. According to this documentary, he was almost getting involved. He was the guy that was actually stepping in between, you know, the executioner and the victim and saying like, nah, he's done nothing wrong. And this kind of thing, like actually involving himself in the events that he was covering, which is sort of against the role of the photojournalist and against the sort of the expected behavior. Really, really brave. But also to the point of recklessness. Like the documentary tracks how he became desensitized to violence and kind of numb, and that the PTSD, the experience coming home, and like the sort of the difficulty in balancing his home and domestic life with his career abroad, like existing on a front line. Ben Anderson, another British journalist, has a similar experience and writes on a similar topic of sort of PTSD and desensitization. But unfortunately, what happened with Tim Hetherington is that he got to the point where he was so desensitized and so brave, he hit a sort of point of recklessness, which I think is what Garland was sort of trying to portray happening to Jesse.
Mm.
At the end of the movie, when they're storming the White House, she's you know, she's jumping around corners before the soldiers have cleared them and stuff, and putting herself like right in the line of fire for the shot. And Tim Hetherington was really doing this. They said, you know, his colleagues were saying he was almost first through the door, and in the end, he was unfortunately killed in Libya in a shelling. I think he was killed in mortar fire, which is obviously tragic. And the guy had such an interesting life. So I'd really recommend everyone checks that documentary out. But I kind of feel like, you know, with the conversation about the photojournalist being important and maybe there's a place for it on screen, it's been done in this Tim Hetherington documentary. Now, fine, you know, that's non-fiction and maybe there should be a fictionalized version, but if you're going to do that, you should do it in a way that really honors the people who are actually doing this stuff. And I'm not saying that Garland failed in that, but as we've already discussed, you know, this whole movie was marketed through what was kind of a dishonest ploy to be about a civil war, and it was really about the photojournalists. And as you say, there was this sort of hollow death at the end where Lee jumps out in front of the bullet to protect Jesse, saves her, and you could say, you know, it's because she sees the value in the work that Jesse's done and all that kind of, you know, it's the passing of the torch, she's the next big photojournalist, her future is bright and important, and Lee's kind of become, she's hit this wall where she's having PTSD at this point in her career, and she's done, right? And she jumps out to save the younger girl and obviously gets shot and killed in the process, and Jesse shoots it, but then the movie ends. That was what shocked me, you know. Then they get to the president, they kill Nick Offerman, Joel gets his line, like his quote, and then the movie just ends, the credits roll, and that's it. And I was like, there was no aftermath. Like, what? How did Jesse feel? What happened? What happened to those photos? Where did they go? Was this all for anything, or was this all completely pointless? So I feel like Garland also did sort of fail to actually portray the role of the photojournalist. Like, what happens afterwards? Where did those photos go? How did they reach the public eye? How did they draw attention to what was happening in the States? Like, it just didn't I feel like it was half-baked. Everything just felt unfinished.
And to be fair, all the way throughout the film, until it was thrown in towards the end, I was like, who's paying these guys?
Yeah. You know,
It ended up being their journalist for Reuters, but like, I feel really strongly that throwing that in towards the end of the film was almost like, oh, we forgot to say that these guys aren't just doing it for free. That would be very admirable that if they were doing work like this for free, but it didn't really feel right up until the point, you know, it wasn't an assignment. The press truck just turned up, and I just felt like there was no real, like, like you said, that the backbone to this, to the press journalism, just wasn't there. You know,
yeah.
You know, who's paying them? Are they checking in with who? You know, all of that kind of stuff.
Where are the photos just going?
Oh yeah, we're from Reuters. When they're basically about to get shot by Jesse Plemons, who I'm just about to come on to.
Right.
So I think you're right about the half-baked. There was. Are you doing a film about Civil War or photojournalism? For me, the response has been it's about photojournalism, so then they probably should have just been upfront about that
and fully explored
and
it.
Jesse Plemons, he probably needs a leading role at this point. I haven't seen him in a leading role for at least 4 years now. When him and Jesse Buckley were in I'm Thinking of Ending Things. He's in Judas and the Black Messiah, but the last leading role I saw him in was the film with Jesse Buckley, and I just think he's very deserving of it. You know, Killers of the Flower Moon comes in after 2.5 hours. We're already all asleep during that film, and then in comes Jesse Plemons with a really interesting cameo at the end, and another unbelievably harrowing cameo in this film. I mean, there's range on that guy. There is absolute range. I mean, it's all kind of creepy range, you know, from the bullying Like Mike, and can you believe he's the one now, Like Mike, to be the, you know,
the most
Bow Wow's disappeared. you know, Jesse Plemons, the bully from Like Mike, to have such amazing range. And I mean, he always does. He's always like more of an anti-hero. He's not like the, you know, in Game Night, he's the creepy next door neighbor. In this, he's, you know, a racist soldier that's taken it into his own hands, really.
Yeah.
And like in Judas and the Black Messiah and Killers of the Flower Moon, he's this kind of, you know, white FBI agent kind of detective coming into a, you know, almost, you know, he's a calm detective coming into a really toxic situation and those as well. There's a real anti-hero range he's got there, and there's got to be a film for him to lead the way. He's brilliant.
Yeah, I think his scene in this was like the heart of the movie. I think everyone would agree. It's like the only point in the movie where Alex Garland really seems to make any type of statement. It's like this could happen, you know. This is sort of like a byproduct of war, especially civil war, and especially civil war in America, is the potential of ethnic cleansing. I mean, that's terrifying that that's true. And it's the only time they sort of like actually turns the mirror on American society, and he does it so well because that Plemons role is just so subtle.
Yeah.
Like, it's just this creepy dude in military slacks. Like, and the red glasses, I know everybody wants to make a thing out of that, because that was apparently Plemons' idea. He was like, we should just chuck on some wacky shades or something. And Garland was like, amazing, because obviously it's that proper colour. It's the weird subversion of kind of wacky and fun, but of course he's a total... like,
I mean, him cold. And those glasses might be the most memorable image, actually, of the whole thing.
Yeah.
I've already seen on IMDb, it's the image.
Yeah,
it's
him
with the gun and the glasses.
I mean, it's absolutely terrifying, isn't it? Like... But it's a very subtle scene, because not really anything is said. You know, like two of them have been captured, Jesse and Boki, something like that. One of the other journalists who shows up by Jesse and his goons, and they're They're burying a mass grave.
I kind of knew he was going to be fodder from the moment he came on screen. Because
so actually, yeah.
He really didn't say... He was driving the car. He really didn't say a word. And 5 minutes later, he gets shot.
Yeah, I mean, I have to... I was just coming on to that. I've got to criticise Garland for that. That is trash writing. Like, just having recently talked about The Art of Killing characters. Literally, these there's four of them on this trip right across the United States, across war-torn United States. Are they going to make it? You know, getting through all kinds of dangerous scenarios, like when they drive into that sniper standoff. I mean, that was like a really cool, tense moment. Yeah. But like that ended quite quickly, and you never find out who's at the other end of that battle or whatever. They move on, and then suddenly out of nowhere, these two colleagues show up driving recklessly in the car next to them. They're like, "Hey, like, fancy seeing you guys here." And then the next dangerous scenario they run into, those two are killed off. Like, I mean, they're the epitome of the red shirts. It's like, quickly chuck some other expendable characters in who we can kill off to really exemplify the danger. But then everyone of note survives.
Yeah.
But of course, Sammy is then killed.
Dies eventually, yeah.
But, you know, he takes a bullet as they're driving away and it kills him off. But like, that, it's different because he's not murdered there and then. It's not the same thing. And it really felt like that red shirt archetype where it's like, quickly chuck some people and we can shoot and kill to like really betray Plemons as evil and make that racist point as well. Because of course, it's the two ethnically non-American characters who are killed by Plemons. And of course, he's asking them all like, where are you from? You know, and the two white characters who say a Midwestern state, that he's like, oh, okay, cool. Mm. He's even a little bit dubious of, like, Florida.
There's a bit about Michael Nora in Florida, yeah, you know, it's just...
Like, a Central American, like, you know? But obviously the Midwest states get a pass. It's very... You know, you slowly start to realise it's like, oh, this is a proud boy or some type of white nationalist. And that's really dark and scary. And I love that he even sort of takes the mick out of Jesse for not knowing why Missouri is called... the Show Me State. He's like, oh, why is it called the Show Me State? And she's like, I don't know. And he sort of just laughs and moves on. And it's like this kind of like, you're not a real American. You don't care about America.
Mm. And the subtle, you know, where are you from? Hong Kong. And he goes, oh, China.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot there just in that bit.
Yeah. This could happen. This could be a result of total political unraveling and civil war in the States. Like, that's a thing, you know, and that's terrifying. But again, it was just that one brief scene where, like, and it was powerful, but it sort of felt like everything either side of that was just imagery building up to that moment. That's like, oh, okay, right, cool, that was scary, that's made his point. It was over way too quick. Sammy just runs him over. And it's like, right, that wasn't particularly believable. And then we just move on. And the culmination, of course, was the storming of the White House, and it just became an action movie.
Mm. No, but yeah, I think Jesse Plemons definitely deserves more in the next couple of years, at least.
I imagine, I think that's probably kind of an argument to make, that maybe the point that Garland was trying to make by telling the story through the eyes of photojournalists and almost through the lens of their camera is that they're so crucial, because that's the only image you get, that's the only insight you would get.
Mm.
And that's why the lack of context is relevant. You know, you can't see anything. We don't know what's going on. We don't know why the president's called airstrikes, or we don't know why these two states have seceded. All we know is what these photojournalists are capturing for us. So there's an argument to be made that it was all intentional, but still, you know, they obviously have conversations about the politics, about the before times, about, you know, the war. So they obviously know.
Mm.
They could,
as we would all know in real life,
about the politics
behind it all.
Yeah, well, there'd presumably be a build-up, you know? Yeah.
Which I think is where the interest in the actual storytelling is, you know, the start of a civil war, you know?
Yeah, and the aftermath, in a way. Like, you know, Sammy was talking about, well, once DC falls, they'll turn on each other, meaning Florida and the Western forces. And it's like, well, did they? Did they rebuild? Yeah. What happened? Like, what actually... Yeah. Did they all... You know, did they immediately then all just die in because Florida showed up at DC, you know, and there's another battle? Like, did they get out with the photos? What happens to Jesse? Like, the ambiguity it didn't feel like a strength of this movie.
Mm. So, looking into the fact that Civil War's become A24's second biggest movie, And A24 is getting a little bit of praise because they also did Everything Everywhere All at Once. Yeah. So, and then I went to look back at some of the other work that A24 has put in, and you know, A24 has been proud of making mid-market movies, you know, mid-budget, and Civil War with its $50 million budget is slightly, you know, pushing that's their box office attempt, and it's gone quite well. But A24 are behind Midsommar, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Iron Claw, Dream Scenario, Men, The Whale, Lady Bird, The Disaster Artist, Sharper, and The Zone of Interest, amongst a lot of others. And what I noticed from that list was these are all films I'm really interested in seeing. They're not the Marvel remakes.
They're original stories.
They're original stories, and they're really interesting original stories.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like A24, you know, soon is going to be a major, major player in the film
industry. I'd say they already are. They've always been the original story guys. They've always been like the sort of the weird, like slightly smaller. We're not trying to be, you know, like, I want to use the term AAA, but I know that's not an industry term, but you know, they've not attempted to be like the biggest thing, the biggest blockbusters. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, they're trying to be, look, we're an original story. Check this out. This is cool. And it's like, they sort of embody the art of cinema still in a way that's still accessible. And I think that's been the case for a while, but I think that, yeah, you're right, we're now seeing them hit the big screen like
that. And stories that people are wanting to engage with.
Yeah, they're getting writers like Alex Garland.
Recognition, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. They're getting writers like Garland and you know, they're employing real artists. They're getting big places. Yeah, we're seeing a step up from A24, which is cool because, I mean, they've been a huge player for a while, and I do tend to enjoy their movies. So yeah, I mean, that's...
I mean, I've seen most, well, about 60% of the movies I've just named on that list, and the other films I haven't seen, I've always wanted to watch anyway. So yeah, I think A24's really arriving. They've now gone into box office territory. They've dipped their toe in. It's gone well, despite the criticism that this story particularly didn't have any depth, which is maybe something to say, okay, your mid-budget films, you've got them right most of the time, and this is your first dip into box office, and you've kind of missed the mark. Maybe, you know, there'll be some revision, and they'll go again, because despite the fact that this Civil War film really didn't have much depth to it, it still really, you know, has performed well for them in the box office. And I think, based on their track record, I think the future's bright. And only 6 months ago, when we were reviewing Super Mario Bros, we were saying, what's happened to the film industry?
That was more than 6 months ago.
Well, yeah, it was probably about a year ago now. But only a year ago, we were saying, what's going on? It's remakes, it's biopics, you know. Yeah. But now we've got A24 with, you know, the last 3-4 years of really solid work, and it's now hitting the main screen. So maybe the future for cinema is brighter than I thought last year anyway.
I have a final point to make, revisiting the beginning of this conversation, the Last of Us comparisons. This is an on the road story, right? You know, it's a story about a group of people in a car traveling across the United States. The more I think about it, the more this is a total Last of Us ripoff. I mean, Joel and Jesse, even just that, so close to Joel and Ellie, the fact that the actor that plays Joel,
I thought was Patrick.
Yeah, like
for the whole movie. I realised this morning, I was like, hang on.
Like that. Like it just seems so close. You know, these two people travelling across war-torn America, or, well, there's four of them obviously in this, but like this unlikely group who actually, you know, initially the Lee Smith kind of embodies Joel's from The Last of Us, his position, towards the younger, who, you know, the initially dubious and frustrated mentor who doesn't actually want to be burdened with this young kid, obviously then growing to love them and die for them. That's Joel's role in The Last of Us. But of course, you literally have that male archetype also called Joel there as well. And they're traveling across this war-torn, you know, this post-apocalypse, really, environment. It's exactly like the imagery and everything. It's way, way, way too similar. And that's quite, I don't know, I'd like to think that's a coincidence, because otherwise Alex Garland's literally just watched The Last of Us or played the game or whatever and been like, I've got an idea, like, let's do one about photojournalism or Civil War or whatever. And just, so I hope that's not, I don't know.
You sound like the conspiracy theories that I come up with about the film industry.
I'm just making a comparison. I don't know whether he's intentionally plagiarized. I doubt he has. But it's I would have changed the names at least, you know? Anyway.